All right, we're back in on the Harbor One Hotline. Is I guess everybody's best friend here on this show is Tom E. Kern. Tom, you're on with Lou Maloney, the smaller Andy, and me.
It's two of my favorite ex-Boston athletes.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah.
Miss you.
Andy.
Yeah.
Waka waka.
I miss you, Tom. Hope you're well.
We're going to get together.
You think, though? You really think? Lou doesn't have time for anybody anymore. He works like 162 days out of the year now, Tom.
I'll go to his kid's Little League game or Babe Ruth game. Or
nice.
Yeah. Game.
Nice. Really there we go. Down. We'll get down that Lakeville range.
So, Kern, so lots of happening down at Gillette. The one thing that stood out to me after, like, talking, listening to, you know, Jabril Peppers was this whole idea that certain slogans aren't noticeable anymore. And one in particular was the whole do your job that was not necessarily on the walls, and maybe it is, but he hasn't seen it. How do you feel about these slogans being removed?
I don't really register an opinion. I understand why you would want to maintain so many of the edicts that Bill Belichick adhered to, whether it's ignore the noise, do your job, speak for yourself. All of those things are important. Whether or not they're on the wall, I think that they would still apply. But I understand why, too, you would say, okay, well, new broom sweeps clean. We're going to do things differently. So I don't have a massive reaction one way or the other.
Well, let me phrase it a different way, because I don't think you're ever allowed to say I don't have an opinion. Because I get yelled at when I say that. People yell at me when I say that.
There's a rap going on in 2 weeks, and you're talking about the slogans on the wall.
Yeah, I'll tell you why I'm talking about the slogans on the wall. Because to me, the whole that do your job is like play like a champion. It's like Roll Tide. Regardless of who the coach is, that should stay. Regardless of how many silos you want to knock down, I think it's silly. Do you have an opinion on that?
When they start losing games because guys forget to do their jobs, then I guess you have a point. I mean, I just don't think it rises to the level of, you know, what's on the wall. I'm surprised.
I know, but what's
on the wall?
The thing is, like, Tommy, I feel like you downplay everything that he does down there. Like, I feel like there's like this level of protection that you have, that, and whenever anybody criticizes Mayer or what he's doing, like, you don't have an opinion or you defend him.
Oh, bam.
I don't. Maybe. I mean, I think the guy's an inexperienced. I mean, what am I supposed to do? Lacerate the guy for not having a sign on the wall? I think that's like picayune type of minor stuff that you're inflamed about. Like I said, with a draft 2 weeks away, something's not on the wall and you're going to pick it. Get the torches and pitchforks. I just don't think it's a big deal. If they stop doing their jobs and start paying attention to the noise, which to a degree I think that they have been doing in this offseason, well, then I guess we have an issue.
All right, Tommy, I want to get back, because I obviously haven't been following it like I once was. So I'm curious, after watching what they did in free agency, the draft approaches, is it obvious, like, what their draft approach would be, given what they signed or didn't sign in free agency, say, other than quarterback?
I think their failures in free agency kind of indicated to me that they might want to be more amenable to trading back. Because if you can't fill your wide receiver need, if you can't fill your offensive tackle need through free agency, to me that would say, okay, well, what are we going to do? We have all these wide receivers here who are going to be first round picks. Do we want to get one of these guys? So when they failed in free agency to bring in anybody noteworthy, I thought that might reconfigure the way they approach the draft. Does it? Did it? We'll find out in 2 weeks. But I think that you have an opportunity at multiple positions, including cornerback, which people haven't really discussed very much, to make the team a lot better with high end talent. So I'm curious to see if any kind of trade down bag emerges that allows them or makes them interested in switching from quarterback. But, you know, when Robert Kraft is talking about, I want, you know, a top tier quarterback from the draft, it's hard to pivot that way.
Tom, I believe you've said it was going to take more than 3 first round picks. Is that accurate in your belief for a trade down?
Yes.
What is more important to the decision of trading down? Is it what happens with the two picks ahead of them, or is it simply how big the bag?
I think it's the bag. I think it's bag size completely. Like, how generous is somebody going to be? How desperate is somebody going to be to move up? And, you know, the inclination is, and that was more of a hypothetical, what would it take?
Mm-hmm.
And it has to outstrip what San Francisco gave up, was basically the contention. So to me, that means four. The only team that can really do four would be the Minnesota, because you can't, if you only have one first round pick this year, you can't go further into the future than 2 years. You can't trade 2027 draft picks. So to me, it's an interesting proposition. It's kind of Minnesota or bust if you're looking for four first round picks.
All right. I'm going to see if you have an opinion on this one.
Oh, boy. Sorry, Tom.
How many quarterbacks?
I don't know.
Listen, it's been that type of week for me. How many quarterbacks in the draft, in the draft, can you say that you watched every single game and every single throw?
Ooh.
Of the top four quarterbacks, can you say you watched every single play that they
had? Has anyone done that?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people bragging
every
about
throw,
it. A lot of people
bragging. Every throw, every run from May, every throw, every run from McCarthy.
Okay, why those two?
From 2023.
Why those two?
Wow. A lot of time.
Because those guys, they're the most likely to be hanging there at three.
And
in
who
my
do you
estimate.
Like? Who do you
I
like
McCarthy's footwork. I like think McCarthy's more athletic. I think McCarthy's arm is just as strong. I like so much about what McCarthy has because I think his floor is higher. So that, to me, argues in favor of McCarthy. I think, to me, is can they go wrong if they take McCarthy? Can they go wrong if they take May? None of those picks, or Daniels, none of those picks you can sit there and say, well, they really screwed that up. That's not the guy, even though I know, Andy Hart,
yes,
that you have absolutely no patience for the McCarthy conversation.
True.
And he's good. He's really friggin' good. So, to me, people will second-guess the McCarthy pick, but I think there's a greater chance if you take Drake May and say, we're going to fix all this stuff. It's not a problem. Footwork, decision-making, inability to slide, all that stuff's going to be fixed. And then in 2 years, because you've been playing with a team that's not very good, none of those problems are fixed, and he's got new ones. So I think McCarthy would be a safer pick. But as Mel Kiper told us yesterday when I asked him about it, he said Drake May is the home run potential.
So I'm just looking at just, you know, when it comes to Drake May, you think about, you know, the amount of attempts, 425 attempts to J.J. McCarthy at 332 attempts just for their 2023 season. Less opportunities to evaluate him based on the amount of times that he's actually thrown. And if you break that down even further, meaningful throws. Now, is he being more judged on his pro day, his combine, and the ultimate, hey, this guy has all the tools, than he is his actual play at Michigan?
If you watch the games against Alabama and Ohio State, you'll see why people would put him up there. So you don't really have those games from Drake May against competition like that. That's, I think, a drawback. Drake May went 6-0 at the beginning of the season. His team finished 7-4. And there's myriad excuses made. Oh, it's the offensive coordinator. It's the eligibility issues for his wide receiver. There was nobody knew where to go. You don't have those same qualifiers attached to J.J. McCarthy because in the games that he played, which were high-leverage, high-stakes games, he performed. So while there's not the same volume of throws for a younger player, the level of success that he had, and yes, he had better players around him than Drake May, but so did Jaden Daniels, arguably have better players there. So did Michael Penix at Washington. So all of these guys come with qualifiers to how they performed in these games. But if you watch Alabama and Ohio State, how many of these guys have you watched every throw of, Christian?
Oh, me? Oh, none of them.
None.
None. Uh-huh. None of every throw. None of every throw. Here's what I do. I'll tell you what I do.
Ooh.
So Merrill Hodge, okay. Dan Orlovsky, like Merrill Hodge comes out and he rips Drake May. And he says, you know, NC State game, it's terrible. Clemson, terrible. So, I go to their worst game and I evaluate them on their worst game. That NC State game was horrible from beginning to end.
Horrible.
The Clemson game, because I think situation, circumstances, is a thing when you're talking about the quarterbacks that you're judging. By the time they reached Clemson, Clemson was pissed. They were playing on the road. By the time they got NC State, that defense, which is stacked with a bunch of great players, a bunch of guys, fifth-year, six-year guys, they're going to be drafted. They were trying to prove a point, and they took it out on Drake May.
These are the qualifiers. These are the qualifiers that get attached to these players depending upon somebody's leaning. For instance, when you look at what McCarthy did against Ohio State and Alabama, those are teams that are just absolutely stocked with not just NFL players, but first and second and third round NFL players. So you're watching somebody go against in Ohio State and run away from NFL-level players with regularity.
Tom, you mentioned before, talking about floor, higher floor. And I guess this goes with like risk-reward. At three, are you looking for the highest floor or the highest ceiling?
Ooh,
look at you.
Circle like,
gets a square. Because
at three, I don't know if I want a floor guy. You know what I mean? I want somebody that's going to take off, skyrocket.
I get you. I totally do. And if you want to do that, and that's why Mac Jones, I think most people said, all right, I get it. Because you never thought the Patriots were going to be a team that would bottom out.
Yeah.
So, hey, all right, so we'll get a game manager. Bill Belichick's the head coach. The team's going to be fine. You get Josh McDaniels, an offensive coordinator. How bad could it get? He's going to be a guy who gets us to 8-8, and if they have guys around him, it could be a 12-13 win team in a couple of years because Mac will be just like Brady, smart, accurate, do the right thing at the right time. Well, he wasn't surrounded by good enough players, so he did bottom out, and that would be my concern. Bottomed out in a way that I don't think a Drake May would, for instance. But if you don't surround these players with good enough talent, how bad will they get? And that, to me, is a concern. If you want to go for the home run, take a massive swing, then Drake May would be your guy, but you're also going to put him in a situation where he has to be a superhero.
Yeah.
If you take J.J. McCarthy, he's not going to make those knee-buckling mistakes, in my estimation, that Drake May might be prone to. And when you start making knee-buckling mistakes, as Mac did, you eventually become completely unusable. So that's why the appeal of trading down, I think, nationally has become much more prevalent in the past week or so for the Patriots, that would be a sensible thing to do. I thought that initially because the team around him isn't that good, but the more I watch the quarterbacks, May included, the more I say, this kid's really friggin' good. This kid could really solve a lot of problems. So, but I still think trading down absolutely has its merits because of the quality of the players in the draft.
Tom, what do you think your guy Tom Brady was doing on this haircut podcast? Not only talking about, maybe being open to coming back, but offering up a team that would make sense would be the Patriots.
Can you ask that question again? I'm sorry.
What do you think Tom Brady was doing bringing up the idea of returning to the NFL and offering up an option by the name of the Patriots?
Spitballing, but never spitballing without purpose.
Ooh.
I mean, does he want to be back involved in the NFL? Is he bored? I don't know, but I just don't think that you offer that up because you know what the reaction's going to be.
Yep.
You know how that's going to play when you mention two teams like that. You understand you're already sending up a trial balloon to the NFL as to would you allow me to play for a team if I am a part owner of them. Now, how could he go anywhere but the Raiders? Can't be part owner of the Raiders and play for the Patriots. It just makes his nonsense. Now, Michael Jordan was a part owner of the Wizards, if I'm not mistaken, when he played for the Wizards. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, I believe that is accurate. Yes.
Yeah. So you can't fathom going any place but that. So does he put his ownership stake on hold, or the NFL has kind of already done that and decide you want to go back and play? But he's a 47-year-old quarterback who only wants to do it on his terms at this point, and he'd make a massive difference. He's probably, you know, still physically able to go out and play better than half the league. So the question is it boredom or is it serious?
Would you take him here?
Sure. I mean, he's going to be better than Drake May in 2024.
Exactly.
He's going to be better than J.J. McCarthy.
And Jacoby Brissett.
I mean, that's... I mean,
but he's still going to be throwing to the same kind of stuff he was throwing to in 2019, minus Ryan Izzo.
Hmm. Wow, this ended really strong. It started off real rough.
Yeah, well, you
started off real rough.
You were a bully. You were a bully.
Wait, listen.
Bully Fourier.
Hey, bully heart. No one
I saw you bullying.
Should be talking
I
about
think
a bully.
You like to ride too much, and you won't say anything mean about him.
Is that how I sound?
That's been sitting in your pocket for a couple
weeks. No.
Seems well, listen, like it was building up.
It is. What are you talking about? Like, there is a lot of noise about how connected you are to Mayo, and, you know, and that's no secret, but that's...
No, but I mean, to impugn one's objectivity based upon the notion that I did a TV show with the guy I just don't think it exists.
You're attacking the man's credibility.
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm looking up impugn. Chris Gasper. I'm looking
any
up impugn.
When they come in... Any coach, when they come in, is going to absolutely have their shortcomings highlighted, which his shortcomings right now are inexperience, you know, clarity of message, et cetera. But I also think you give him the mental attitude. I was talking to Felger last night on BST. I'm like, when do you want Alex Van Pelt and Ben McAdoo fired then? Exactly. Because, you know, he's in a position where he just continues to say on television how horrible these guys are. I'm like, how do you know that? So there's a benefit of the doubt product. So, again, if they stop doing their jobs, if centers start lining up at wide receiver, then we'll have a conversation about how they should have kept the sign up.
All right. The sign is down. Tommy Curran, have a great weekend.
See you, Tom.
And we'll talk to you next week, next Tuesday. Tommy Curran, back in your regular spot. Thanks, Tom. That's Tommy Curran.
Bye, guys.